Kia ora, this program is brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Wellington Access Radio, make your voice heard.
Eve Galair, August Fáltrigidí, Capital Irish. This is Marion Grealis here for our show today. And we have a very special guest in studio. Welcome to Paul O'Hara, who is our new Deputy Head of Mission here at the Embassy of Ireland to New Zealand in Wellington. Welcome, Paul.
Guru Margaret and Miriam. Tom on Sosa Vancho, Lat Gurmago Dostuquera.
Ah, Interker Foth of Fáltrigidí. So, Paul, can you tell us a little bit about your background and how you've come to join us here in Wellington?
Thanks very much, Miriam, for having me. And it's great to be here with you today. I arrived in New Zealand 6 weeks ago this weekend from my previous posting, which was to the Embassy of Ireland in Malawi in Southern Africa. So as you can imagine, this is quite the change, but it's a change I'm really looking forward to. I've had the pleasure so far in the 6 weeks I've been here to meet quite a lot of members of the Irish community, members of other embassies here in Wellington. It's been quite a hectic few weeks, while also at the same time getting settled into our new house, which has been great too. So it's been busy, but it's been really rewarding, and it's a super town as well. Like, it's a fantastic city to be located in. We've also got an excellent embassy office, which you may have been to, and a lot of listeners perhaps have seen as well. So it's a really pleasant place to work. We've great team as well. We have an excellent ambassador. We have really good local staff support team as well. So I couldn't really ask for a nicer posting to arrive into.
Fantastic. And so you have been working for the Department of Foreign Affairs, obviously in that previous posting. Had you been at the department for much before that posting in Malawi?
So I joined the Department of Foreign Affairs in March 2019. I had previously spent a year on a secondment in the department as well in 2015-16. So I did have a sense of how the department worked when it came to, you know, recruitment again for a permanent position there. I had previously been working in revenue, so our Tax and Customs Authority. So I was able to go on a temporary secondment to DFA, as we call it, in 2015-16. And then I permanently made the switch in 2019, which was brilliant, and then went straight into our work on Brexit readiness. So that was quite an interesting 2.5 years there, working on Ireland's coordinated effort to be as ready as possible for the fracture that was Brexit, and to make sure that all our messaging around that was well heard and well understood around Europe and around the wider world, which I think our colleagues in embassies across Europe and the world did a super job on, and it was an immense piece of cross-government coordination from all our departments and agencies to make sure that we were as ready as could be should a no-deal Brexit come to pass, which ultimately, thankfully, it didn't. And there is obviously an agreement there and a protocol in place to make sure that that new arrangement, if you like, is as seamless as possible. And you know, it was really interesting to see how government can coordinate on such a major historic historic issue as that, and to see it up close and to play, you know, a very small part in that was a great privilege. But also, you know, it was a mammoth task for government and for the EU as a whole to respond to.
Yeah, and I guess when the stakes are high, like, that's when, you know, people can work together the best sometimes, like, because you gotta, like, you just gotta. So that just sounds like...
Yeah, absolutely. And then, like, from that, as you say, sometimes it takes great stress or a crisis to really see how people can work together. And as things often do, crises or major incidents can come in pairs. And then, you know, in the middle of the whole drama, if you like, Brexit, came the pandemic, of course. So, you know, from our part, working on that brief or in any role, really, in our department, to have to switch very quickly to remote working and to try and maintain the relationships that we have to, you know, build and keep up when you can't necessarily meet people face to face, or you might have only met people remotely, as you know, if you like, and to still make sure you do the work effectively under tight deadlines was an added complication and added stress, if you like. But then it became very normal very quickly for all of us, you know.
Yeah, and I think that's the story of a whole heap of organisations, both commercial and government as well. And so what have your first 6 weeks been like in terms of work? Like, have you sat down and read a whole lot of emails? Have you been out to meet various community groups? What's that look like?
All of that and much more. So, yeah, I arrived in on, I think, the 22nd of July after, as everyone knows, the very long flight from Europe.
Oh, yeah, I've heard of that. Yeah.
And so it took me a few days to kind of get my head right. I was straight into the office then a couple of days later. And, yeah, I was really keen as early as possible to meet my as many of my counterparts in the other embassies as possible, to meet representatives of our Irish community groups, the Hutt Valley Irish, the Wellington Irish Society, the members down in South Island, and plenty besides, GAA and things like that. And I'm still, to be honest, having
that
initial round of introductions, which is great, and it's really important. And also just coming to grips with how processes and, ways of working in the embassy, which, you know, are very similar across our network, but, you know, each embassy has different ways of doing things. And we've got an excellent support team there, local staff who keep the show on the road as well. And Jane's a super ambassador to work for as well. So, you know, it's a great place to come into, and to, you know, all of us, when we come into a role like that, you know, have to get our feet under the table pretty quickly. But also at the same time, it's important to make sure you make the effort to make the human connections as well, because, you know, ultimately we're here as an embassy to represent the government of Ireland in New Zealand, and to develop the already excellent relations that exist between Ireland and New Zealand, and to make sure that those our own interests and are put forward in the best possible way. But at the same time, we have our role as consular officials and community support people, if you like, as an embassy. It's, you know, connecting with the Irish community is a really, really important part of what we do, and offering support where we can, and, you know, being an office that can help, you know, if there are kind of consular issues, or, you know, the usual kind of things around emergency travel documents and, you know, and the various sort of run-of-the-mill items, if you like, of
the business as usual type thing.
And how people from the outside, if you like, kind of conceive of an embassy, which is very much around passports, it's very much around St. Patrick's Day and other events and things like that. And we've already, even in the short time I've been here, had a couple of events, and only this past week we had a very nice event to celebrate a book launch by Dr. Marco Sanzani, an academic in Victoria University, who has put together a great piece of work, actually, chronicling the translation work of Seamus Heaney, who, aside from being obviously Nobel laureate poet and playwright and prose writer, did an immense work as a translator, translating poetry from a number of languages. And Marco has put together a huge collection of Seamus Heaney's work, and it was timely because on the 30th, I think, of August, it was his 10th anniversary of his death. So we were able to kind of mark that with a lovely message, actually, from Catherine Heaney, his daughter, that we were able to beam in on the night at the book launch as well.
Oh, lovely.
So we have those events coming up. We'll be looking to do things like that over the rest of the year, and thinking of ways to mark the Rugby World Cup, obviously.
And our victory.
I was only listening to a thing, or what I saw a thing on Twitter during the week there, where Opta, the stats agency, who you'd know probably from the Premier League and football, who apparently simulated the World Cup something like 10 million times, as they can do, and Ireland unequivocally came out on top of that. So who am I to disagree with that statistical?
Well, I mean, they needn't bother playing, I guess, really. Because if the AI has given us the outcome already, they
No, I don't want you kind of holding this up against me now if things go wrong. So we can only hope they'll do really well. I think they're in a good place.
I'll head down to the TAB afterwards and send you the receipt. Did you have any pre-existing links to New Zealand?
Not directly, I have to say. I know a couple of people from school and from home who have been here. Mm. Definitely plenty of people have been here on holidays and things like that. And, you know, perhaps as part of a year in Australia, they've come across. I know people were at the World Cup when it was here in 2011. Mm-hmm. A couple of people I know from school are still here. I know my wife, Aisling, has a friend up in the North Island, top end somewhere. Somewhere near Auckland. I can't think of where exactly.
Right.
Not very many direct links, but having said that, I think it's fair to say that there are so many things here that just link Ireland and New Zealand, and not least around sport. Like, obviously, quite interested in sport, and you know, I think watching a lot of rugby and cricket and stuff growing up, you can't but come across place names and players and things like that. So it doesn't in that sense, it's quite familiar. And then just being interested in countries that are like us and have similar interests, similar sort of things that we're good at and things that we stand for. And, you know, New Zealand is right there with us on so many of those things. And even though obviously we couldn't be further away geographically, there are so many things that link us together, you know, in terms of politics, in terms of our outlook towards the wider world, in terms of, you know, the thing, as I said, the things that we stand for, but also the things that we enjoy and the kind of, I guess in some ways, the kind of people we are and how we, you know, the fact that we're bilingual countries, which I know the experience with Irish and English and Tureo and English is different, but there are still a lot of similarities and a lot of things we ought to celebrate in how they are similar as well.
Yeah, big values overlap, really.
Absolutely.
Yeah, excellent. Now, you have brought along some tracks to play. We asked you to let us know what music you'd like us to play. Tell us about what you've picked for us.
So, my first choice today is Sinead O'Connor's version of O Roshe the Vaha Walia. And I picked that because, not least because it's only a few short weeks after her untimely passing, which is very sad. And obviously was noted with real sadness here in New Zealand as well. It was quite soon after I arrived. And even within the office, people were sorry to see Sinead gone so young. And O Roshe the Vaha Walia is a song that I've been told if I ever have to deliver a waiata at a marae or a pōwhiri, what better song could you pick than O Roshe the Vaha Walia? Because it's Oscailga, it tells a story, it refers to Grainne Whale, who I'm sure is a male woman you'd be happy with. And I think it has all the ingredients of a great Irish waiata, so why not?
Excellent. Well, let's have a listen.
Great stuff.
Oh,
And that was Sinead O'Connor there with Ó Rois de Bhaithiwalla. You're listening to Capital Irish on Wellington Access Radio 106.1 FM. And I'm your host, Marion Grealis, with our special guest today, Paul O'Hara from the Embassy of Ireland to New Zealand, our deputy head of mission there. Paul, before the break, we were chatting about a little bit about your previous roles at Malawi. And I was wondering if you wouldn't mind sharing with us what some of the highlights from your time there were.
Yeah, it was a really interesting posting. I was really privileged to work there for a couple of years after, as I said, after my time at headquarters. We were based in Lilongwe, the capital. Malawi is one of the poorest countries in the world. It's some really stark statistics about Malawi. It's the, I think last time I checked, it was the 10th poorest country in the world. It's the poorest country in the world not to have had a war in its time as an independent state. It's the least electrified country in the world.
Wow, gosh, yeah.
Yeah, only 11% of the population have access to the electricity grid. Mm-hmm. So those are a lot of the challenges. Like you have millions of people, population of almost 20 million, and the great majority of those are subsistence farmers, existing with, you know, very small amounts of money and, you know, trying to survive on what they produce, usually the maize crop. So that's the context. It's an incredibly warm and friendly country. The tourist tagline they always use is the warm heart of Africa. It's incredibly scenic. It's a long, narrow country, I'd say slightly over twice the size of Ireland. And on one side is the 500 kilometer long Lake Malawi, which is really spectacular, one of the great lakes of Africa, which itself is full of, you know, the kind of tropical fish you'd see in an aquarium. Quite literally, they do take them from Lake Malawi, and it's a great place to visit, even when, you know, on posting there, to be able to go to the lake for a weekend away and things like that was really cool. But yeah, in terms of highlights, we got through quite a lot of stuff. One of the things I really enjoyed was our St. Bridget's Day program in my first year there, where we had a series of workshops with creative women, essentially, artists, musicians, DJs, and captured that in a short film that we screened at the ambassador's residence on St. Bridget's Day, so accompanied by a panel discussion. So I love that. That was really, a really nice thing to put together under a tight deadline, but it was well worth doing. And there were some Irish links in that as well. Our head of development at the embassy, his daughter, is an Irish musician who's and her mother is African. So there were those links, and she was able to bring together some of those contacts in the artistic arena in Malawi. So like one of my things there was to showcase what we could do aside from our very valuable and very important overseas development program there, but that there was also areas where Ireland was creating links around culture, around our community, a very small Irish community there. We set up a GAA club again after years in abeyance. So it was fun to do a family kind of tournament on St. Patrick's Week just this year. So things like that were highlights. We had the Minister for the Diaspora, who was also Minister for Overseas Development, Sean Fleming, come to visit us in April as well. So he had a lovely event with the Irish community and others in the residence there in Lilongwe. And that was great. It was great to kind of have a minister there to, you know, to come and meet our Irish and to see what we do and the really valuable work that Irish Aid does in Malawi as well. And we were able to go on a couple of trips up country to see how people were having their lives made better by Irish taxpayers' money, to put it bluntly. And it's really important to see that it goes to good use to people on the ground, you know, smallholder farmers, social cash transfers in a couple of districts. Like, and this is Irish money going directly to good use. So it was very, I suppose it was a real privilege for me, even though I wasn't working directly as such on the aid program, but to support the embassy in doing that work. So my role was essentially to cover the rest of what the embassy does around community, consular, trade, political, making sure the admin function of the embassy was taken over with our brilliant team there as well. And Yeah, so that was, it was cool, but very different from here, as you can imagine.
I can imagine, yeah. Your predecessor, Farron Foley, was a guest on our show a couple of times. Has she left like a little book of Farron tips on your desk for you?
You joke, but she has. She's amazing.
I did joke, but I didn't think.
She's a superstar, and I couldn't ask for a better predecessor. It's quite daunting to fill into her shoes, so to speak. Mm. She did leave me an incredibly detailed handover booklet, yep, if you like, for which I'm eternally grateful, because it covers off all aspects of what the deputy head of mission is expected to do, but also, by the same token, shows just how much of that there is.
Yes.
So I couldn't be more grateful to Farron, and just listening to people in the community and in the diplomatic corps, you know, in the other embassies speak so highly of her. Mm. You know, is a testament to the work she did here.
Yeah.
And she's gone on to bigger and better things in Ireland as well, which is great and well-deserved. And she's just had a little boy called Tuchel,
who I've
also had the privilege of meeting. It's actually very rare that you would see your predecessor on the ground in the country you arrive into, but because she had Tuchel so close to my arrival, it facilitated that sort of
in-person
live
meeting.
Handover. But I didn't want to abuse that too much other than to say hello
and
catch up.
I feel like maybe
up.
She had other things to do.
Exactly.
That's why she wrote the book, maybe.
100%. But at the same time, I'm super grateful that she did. So, yeah, really, really, really great to be able to continue her good work, her legacy. Let's be honest, like it's been super what she's been able to lead on, you know, even things in the embassy like our youth council, our summer schools that we have, and just further enhancing Ireland's good reputation and good standing in this country, you know, that she was able to drive forward, you know.
Yeah, held in very high regard. Yeah.
Yeah, rightly so.
Yeah, excellent. Oh, well done, Farron, if you're listening. We're very impressed. Now, lately, you would have arrived, I think, maybe a little bit after the start of the FIFA Women's World Cup. You got to attend some of those matches?
I did. I left Dublin, so I spent a couple of weeks in Dublin between postings just to catch up with family and friends, and I left for the airport on the final whistle of the Ireland-Australia game. They did. It was good effort. I mean,
it was.
And obviously Vera has left this week as well. So I left and arrived then. So with the tournament just beginning to take off. And I should say as well, Ireland played Australia just after a New Zealand beat Norway.
That's so right. Yes.
That was an unbelievable victory. And huge for, I guess, the tournament here, you know, kicked it off in the right way. So I was staying just after I arrived here. You know, my temporary accommodation was facing the cake tin, which I was delighted with. So I went to four games. I went to Sweden, South Africa, where South Africa gave a good account of themselves against a really good Swedish team. I went then to New Zealand versus Philippines, which was disappointing for the football fans. And then I went to Sweden's demolition of Italy. They were a great team, the Swedes. And then the last game I went to was Norway, who lost to Japan.
Oh, yeah, in the round of 16.
Japan went through there. So I loved it. It was great to be able to come in the middle of that tournament. And I love football. So it was great to have a World Cup literally on my doorstep. I couldn't have asked for a better weekend and a couple of weeks after my arrival as well. Just sort of to, you know, for something to do straight away, like to get stuck into that. And there was great enthusiasm even in the office and around the place. And obviously we have embassies here in Wellington of countries who were playing here as well. And they were obviously super keen as well. I mean, you know, you think as someone who works for our embassy network, would it have been better if Ireland were here when I arrived, or would I have been able to enjoy it the same way? I guess it would have been better if they were here and to be able to kind of enjoy it that way, you know? But I really enjoyed watching the World Cup, but even just more broadly, I mean, as I said earlier, like the sporting links between our countries are huge. It's just the nature of how these tours fall that the rugby was before I arrived. but hey, I watched it in a long way, which was great. With the embassy team over there, which was a nice thing to be able to do as well. But But yeah, I'll be keen to look at ways that, you know, we can further enhance those links as well.
Yeah, because I feel like those international sort of sports events may offer opportunities to the diplomatic corps to forge those links even further. So,
yeah. Well, massively, sports diplomacy is a great.
Oh, there's a name for it. Oh, yeah. Sports diplomacy.
Well, it's a great kind of arm of, you know, what you'd also call soft power. You know, it's a way of kind of enhancing your value. You know, it doesn't always work. And, you know, it's not always appropriate to every, you know, situation. Context. But, but, you know, in many ways, it can be a good way of enhancing your values and, you know, and drawing out links and, you know, using it for opportunities around things like tourism and education and working in Ireland, for example. So yeah, it can be a great thing to look into, but it's only one element of what we do here, you know, and what we're looking to do over the period ahead.
Now, I've just looked at the clock and I'm very surprised to find that we are at the end pretty much, but I will just quickly ask before we wrap up, what are you most looking forward to?
Seeing as much of New Zealand as possible.
Excellent.
Getting up and down the country.
Yep.
Maybe getting to the Chatham Islands, and then
lovely.
If I'm lucky to at least one of the other countries that we cover from here, which are the Pacific Island states, or some of them. So, travel, meeting people, and just keeping up the good work that the embassy's been doing since we arrived here.
Fantastic. We might just get a few bars of a song and tell us what are we going to listen to as we head out?
Yeah, band from County Louth, the Merry Wallopers, really popular in Ireland at the moment, and rightly so. Kind of folk meets kind of Pogues, almost like meets the Dubliners, and they sing often about the experience of the Irish abroad. So this is them singing The Holy Ground.
Thank you so much for joining us, Paul, and goodbye to all our listeners. Hope you enjoy today's show. Slán go fóill.
Slán libh.
You've been listening to Capital Irish on Wellington Access Radio 106.1 FM, thanks to the generosity of our sponsors. We couldn't be here without them. Our sponsors are Wellington Irish Trust, Susie and Peter McGuinness, and the Hutt Valley Irish Society. A very big thank you from all of us on the Capital Irish team.
That program was brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Get your voice heard.
Thanks, New Zealand On Air, for funding accessmedia.nz.